Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 20th of March. We have to get going because we only have Malcolm Dance for 15 minutes. So we're gonna start. We have Alan Chartok here. We have Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union and the Empire Reports, J.P. Miller. Hello to you all. Of course, counterterrorism expert and MSNBC analyst and commentator Malcolm Nance is with us. He just got a phone call that he's got to be on the air at 10 o'clock, so we're going to lose him here in a few moments. He was supposed to be with us for the full 90 minutes, and then, strangely, he has allegiances to the people who pay him.
Dang, I don't know.
So let's go with, let's start with the stories that, the one story, there's a shooting in Maryland that seems to be under control at the moment, but then the larger story, of course, is the bombings in Texas, in Austin, another tragic attack or explosion this morning. Right. What do we know about this?
Well, that explosion occurred at a FedEx facility, which lends to the credence to the theory amongst us in the counterterrorism world that there is a domestic terrorist bombing campaign occurring in Austin, Texas right now. It appears oriented towards the initial attacks were against minorities, and there may have been a couple of hipsters who walked across a tripwire booby trap that injured them the other day. This is serious. The methodologies of delivery of these devices have all been very varied, which tells you that it's a person who's skilled in building these bombs, delivering these systems. Two of the original ones were devices which detonated due to a tumbler-activated switch, which means you have to pick it up. Those are very dangerous. It means that the bomb maker actually has to set the device on site. So the original two attacks, you know, if anybody saw anything, they may have actually seen the actual bomber. But it lends the credence to the theory that this is a former military person or somebody who has a lot of time playing with explosives. And I don't know about you. I lived in a place called San Angelo, Texas. And there are a lot of people that use dynamite and explosives with alarming regularity down there to remove tree stumps and things like that or just blow them up for fun. So it remains to be seen. But this last device appeared to have been delivered to FedEx, which was a completely different.
This was, that's right. It was at a FedEx center in Schertz, S-C-H-E-R-T-Z, Schertz, Texas, about 60 miles south of Austin, much closer to San Antonio, actually, than Austin.
Right, yeah. A distribution center, though, but it lends to the belief that the bomber is not, he wanted to first deliver them, then set up a booby trap tripwire. Now he's doing mail bombings. In order to disguise his delivery process so that law enforcement doesn't get used to one. And it appeared that it was addressed to an address in Austin.
Four bombings in Austin, the first on March 2nd, the most recent. This morning there have been at least two killed, many others injured. I don't believe any fatalities from this morning's.
Not from this morning, no. Okay. It was at the facility. It just went off in the facility.
All right. So that's one story. The other story that we want to get to before Malcolm takes off here is the Cambridge Analytica story, which we talked a lot about yesterday. I'm sure we're going to be talking about the story a lot over the next couple of days and weeks. A senior Facebook official has exited over dispute on Russian ploys. Alex Stamos is said to have had internal disagreements over how the social network should deal with its role in spreading disinformation. He advocated transparency in disclosing Russian activity, often to the consternation of other top executives, including Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook. And the story, and we're learning more about Cambridge Analytica. We're learning more about what Facebook did in this case and what they were up to.
Yeah, well, and this is the part of the story I really like. Because when I wrote Plot to Hack America about 19 months ago, there was a lot of suspicion that Cambridge Analytica, as this data processing organization, was what we called the bridge between Russian intelligence creating propaganda product and the Trump campaign. Up to that point, their CEO, Alexander Nix, had kept this persona, you know, had kept this front for the group that they were just merely data crunching. We've learned now from these videos that came out by ITN Channel 4, which I received in advance. They had put them in embargo. And it shows you they are a professional dirty tricks organization. That company will not be in business very long. That being said, I mean, they were talking about bribing people. They were talking about, you know, sending prostitutes to discredit people, acting at, like spies in disguises to go out and take data and then use that data maliciously to destroy opponents in a campaign. It's all caught on videotape. Alexander Nix himself is there saying that this is what the organization would do, which would lead us to believe that they were far, it's a far more insidious company. That being said, Facebook is in serious trouble here. I believe they lost, what, 7% of their value yesterday? Yeah, Alan?
Leading to the question, Malcolm, as a serious investor, which I know you are, is this a good time to buy Facebook?
No, I think what's happening is that their senior leadership is not coming to grips with this.
Stupid.
And they need to just come out and say, look, we had no idea this was done. We're the victims. We will no longer do this.
But is that true?
Yeah, it's not true.
Well, to a certain extent. But one last point. I was quoted by Jennifer Rubin yesterday in an article for The Washington Post where I said, what happens if 100 million progressives in the United States decide that this is the cruise missile for the Trump campaign for future elections and they want no part of this company anymore? Just imagine what will happen to their shares if people lose all trust in them.
And in fact, they have that problem in that Facebook is always worried about losing customers one way or the other. So we know that Zuckerberg has been a bit of a genius. His people have been genius in that they are always looking to find other properties, other things that can keep them ahead of the game.
But when you mess up, you got to fess up, right?
Well, I couldn't agree more. I'm astounded. I've always liked Zuckerberg, you know, as a person and as somebody to be admired. But I think this is unbelievable that, you know, he just doesn't step up, say, we messed up, we're sorry. I wouldn't say we just found out about it because I don't think that's true. But I say, you know, we messed up, we're sorry about it, and we'll do better.
They've known about it for a long time.
Yeah, two years.
2015. Cambridge Analytica complied with Facebook's terms of service, and they were harvesting data on voters to try and influence voters for the election. When the Obama campaign did this in 2012, everybody hailed the brilliant data miners at the Obama campaign. Look how smart these guys are. They're collecting data on all these Facebook users and figuring out how to target those voters. Now that Cambridge Analytica did it to help get Trump elected, everybody's saying, well, no, this is nefarious.
Well,
this
there is
bad
a difference.
News.
That was in the open, and it was talked about, and it was fully disclosed that they were targeting people who had political leanings. This is in the Obama campaign. This time, it's all stealth.
How is it stealth?
It's stealth in that nobody...
They told everybody they did it on 60 Minutes.
Cambridge Analytica?
Yeah.
When did they
tell them that? The Trump campaign said we targeted Facebook users. We brought a team of Facebook people into our campaign. The Hillary people said we don't want the Facebook people in our campaign. We don't want them around us.
No.
Well, whether it's okay or not, it was either okay for the Obama campaign and the Trump campaign to do well, or it's bad for both of them.
I think
right?
You're focusing a little too much on the narrow issue of Facebook using data. That's not what happened here. Cambridge Analytica did have a contract. They did do the same thing that virtually everybody else does, which is buy information. Then they stole 50 million profiles to create what they call psychotypes. Specifically for Trump voters.
They stole it, Facebook would be suing them.
Yes, they did.
That's all according to Facebook terms of service. Didn't steal it.
We'll find out from Facebook whether that, because Facebook alleges that that information was taken without their consent and illegally. And that's why they kicked Cambridge Analytica off a few days ago. If it was all done with a nudge, a wink and a smile, we're going to find out about that.
They didn't allege that it was done
more
illegally.
More importantly, is that we believe in the U.S. intelligence community that Cambridge Analytica was a vehicle for Russian intelligence-crafted propaganda. that was developed by the Kremlin between 2012 and 2015, and that they used this information to cruise missile specific intelligence or specific political propaganda designed to achieve an end for Donald Trump into the minds of those people that Cambridge had used Facebook's data for. Facebook is, in the end, we don't particularly care about Facebook. It's going to be what Cambridge Analytica did, how they did it. And now we know they are just not some innocent data company. They are a dirty tricks campaign of the worst form.
You know what was interesting to me was watching the kid who blew the whistle.
Yeah.
Did you guys see him on the air?
Yeah.
You know, his hair was several different colors, and you know, he had accoutrement in his nose and all of that stuff. And so what does that teach you? It teaches you that no matter how safe you think you are in all of this, there's always going to be somebody who may be the wink link who talks to people and who blows the whistle.
This shows you that there's going to need to be regulations on people's information. Facebook's real concern should be, should half of the people that are on there right now lose complete and total confidence that their information will not be abused and abused to bring in an autocrat into power.
But what is the definition of abused? If JP points out, if they learn that you have a certain...
It's like art.
Right. Well, I know what I see it. Right.
Yeah. Well, whatever you can get away with, as Andy Warhol said.
But if you're going to target people who like to bake because they write on Facebook that I bake some brownies, and you're going to get ads for baked goods or flour and sugar.
But if you rig the Great British Baking Show, right, and that you have an entire nation's intelligence apparatus going for Trisha over Lutetia, then you're talking about essentially cheating and now FEC violations that might be part of this as well.
But I think you're right. I think it's regulation that is why Sandberg and Zuckerberg are holding off on this. They and the rest of Silicon Valley regard total access, total freedom as the only way to go with these internet companies, including doing whatever they want with your data that they collect, and they collect a lot of data. And that's, I think, it's going to change. I think the tide is that there will be regulations on what data they can collect, what they can do with it, et cetera.
Well, what happens is when you sign up for Facebook, and when everybody signs up for Facebook, there is a terms of service on there. And everybody clicks away a lot of rights yep. when that terms of service happens, or when you acknowledge that terms of service. And that allows the Obama campaign to collect data on 200 million Facebook users and use it to win two elections very successfully. That allowed Cambridge Analytica to harvest data
you mean to help
on
win.
America
you mean to win,
yeah, help.
To help Trump win.
Yeah.
So it is Facebook, and it
Obama.
Also is. You know, Facebook isn't Trump. Creating all of the content in Facebook. It's simply a user-generated platform. You have 200 million users updating stuff all day, every day, 24 hours a day. It'd be impossible for them to regulate user-generated
but
content.
This is not like France helped Obama win the election by misusing data that they harvested from Facebook. These people weren't pushing Hello Kitty videos, all right? They were literally manipulating the mindset of the American public right down to the individual level. And I think that's where the insidiousness of this all will come out. And that's when people start thinking, hey, that's abuse.
And let's not forget who the money was for Cambridge Analytica, right?
Yeah, the Mercers.
Hmm?
The Mercer family, yeah.
Mercer
the rich billionaires who are ultra-conservative, who bankrolled the founding of this company, I believe.
With Steve Bannon, right.
Yeah.
So if you were them, would you be a little bit concerned somehow that your unimpeachables would be corrupted by the public perception that you were helping the Russians?
But they got their investment payoff. I mean, they have Donald Trump in office.
Absolutely.
You know, Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner were on the board of Cambridge Analytica. Alexander Nix went before a British parliamentary hearing last year and lied, apparently, and told them that there was no interaction, no data from Facebook used. This morning, I don't know whether it's happened, but last night, a British parliamentarian was calling for a warrant to be drafted to have them search Cambridge Analytica for stolen data because they think that this was done during the Brexit campaign as well. It's all insidious, and now Alexander Nix has joined the pantheon of Bond villains.
JP, do you want any more words on this?
I think it's really on Facebook that they allow their data. That's what their business is to sell data. And it's and I realize that the video that came out of Cambridge Analytica is very bad. The fact that if it's true that they were trying to set up politicians with prostitutes and that kind of stuff. But I think it's interesting how the media is covering the data that Cambridge Analytica harvested, saying that this is insidious.
Yeah.
But when Obama does it,
well, what did they do with it? Did they lie? Did the Obama campaign put out any falsehoods? Did they target people with?
Never. No, Obama campaign would never put out a falsehood.
Oh, I didn't think
never.
So.
No, that's right. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Facebook is really. If I were the CEO of Facebook, and I hope he's listening to the sound of my voice, I would immediately. Full-throated transparency campaign, and all of this would be on the head
absolutely.
Of Cambridge Analytica.
They don't want to give up. They don't want any regulation. That will foster
then
a
they
move
will
for regulation.
Burn.
Yeah,
because think, this I, is yeah. now part of. I've been saying this for 18 months. This started as a spy hunt. We now have an organization which may have facilitated foreign intelligence. Facebook needs to burn them as quickly as possible and to open up and become transparent on this subject, or they will suffer.
All right. You have to go.
Yay. Bye.
All right. You're going off to MSNBC. Hopefully our listeners don't follow you. but we wish you well. Let us know when you can come back. Malcolm Nance will be back with J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, and, the whole WAMC orchestra right after this. One of the better band names to come across our show here in a while, Shovels and Rope. Shovels and Rope. Their new album, Little Seed, Shovels and Rope, will be at The Egg tomorrow night on March 21st. You can find out more by going to theegg.org there. The fine folks at Shovels and Rope are providing our bumper music this morning.
Isn't
Shovels and Rope.
Nice of them.
Yes. We thank you. So when people say, hey, what was that music you played? It was Shovels and Rope. And we have it on our webpage as well, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay. So we have letters. We have a fresh new crop here. So let's go to those, Alan, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay, Joe. Luke says, JP is wrong. JP, stop with the both-siderism. Facebook approved an academic researcher to use opt-in data from 230,000 users. Then Cambridge Analytica stole all the data from every friend, in capitalized friend, of those 230,000 users and weaponized it on behalf of Trump. On Trump with the help of the Russians. This is different than taking a list of users who comply with the terms of service and sending ads their way in a broader, more scattershot fashion. That's from Luke.
All right, JP, you want to respond to your critic?
Sure. So in 2012, MIT Technology Review, when you installed the Obama app, which was downloaded by over 1 million Obama supporters, and I'm glad the Obama campaign did this. They were good. That's how they won the election. The campaign boasted that more than 1 million people downloaded the app, which, given an average friend size of list of 190, means that 190 million had at least some of their Facebook data vacuumed up by the Obama campaign. And when this happened, everybody touted it as great, how brilliant these people are to collect all this data. It's just either both campaigns were wrong or both were right.
Well, it's what you do with the data, though. Don't you think? If you use it to reach people with factual information, that's one thing. If you use it with skewed information, and I think that Cambridge Analytica's own credibility has been demonstrated.
We know that.
Yeah. And I'd like to know what it is that they use to target the people who would be leaning towards Trump to create further furor with them and get them out.
I mean, can you imagine, Mike, Barack Obama, trying to get to the sexual peccadilloes of the people who are running against him? Nonsense. That doesn't happen. So your point is extremely well taken, I think. I mean, they have this Channel 4 UB, which went in and did this on this, you know, cloak of darkness and found out that they were going to do that. They were going to send prostitutes in to compromise people. That makes your point, I think, extremely valid. Well,
next letter.
Yeah. Okay. M says, please discuss Mercer's funding of Trump, his relationship to Cambridge Analytica, and very importantly to Steve Bannon and Reclaim New York.
I think we did that.
We did that already. Yeah. Thank you. Jesse says, Facebook breach won't matter. I hate to say it, but no one sub 35 cares an iota about this. One, our data has been stolen so many times we're completely desensitized. Two, we're so addicted to social media that we would agree to giving up our firstborn child as long as we can get into Facebook, onto Facebook. A little data loss, no big deal. I think there's something wrong with that. I think there's something, there's a good story.
Well, there's
here.
A new awareness. Yeah. I think traditionally people just click, like you were saying before, JP, on that terms of service. Yeah, like nobody ever reads it. It's like 12 pages long if you ever printed it out.
I don't have my attorney present usually when I'm getting ready to move ahead.
I just want to get on there and see the latest pictures from Larry's birthday party.
Right.
Yeah. Or Donald Jr. So, okay, so Roshni says, Texas bombings. I've heard the Texas bomber referred to as a serial bomber. Why isn't the bomber a terrorist? Is it because they don't think it is a Muslim person? Would love to hear your opinions.
No, I think it's been classified as perhaps, in fact, Malcolm, who's the expert, used the term, a terrorist. I think it's an in-country terrorist is what people have been describing.
Well,
this
business of nomenclature is pretty good, pretty important.
Domestic terrorist is what I meant.
Yeah. You guys probably, I think I've raised this before, but nobody in the room remembers George Metesky?
No.
Tell us.
George Metesky, in the 1950s, I believe, was the mad bomber. And he used to leave bombs underneath people's subway seats. It was very uncomfortable to sit down when you were going up to Hunter College. So, and they would like to assign names to these guys. And they're trying to assign this guy the name of the serial bomber.
He was captured in 1957.
Who, George Metesky?
Yes. He began in 1940 and had 33. He hid 33 pipe bombs in public spaces throughout New York City.
And wow. When I first heard about this, I thought of the Unabomber. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and thank you for that, Rushy. Okay, and now we're going to go to another letter, yet from another person, from John. People on the right are saying that the Obama campaign get the same thing as the Trump campaign, data mining. Please explain the difference, as I believe this to be inaccurate. I think there was a little bit of Mike, you would know more about this than me.
JP's uncomfortable report is that the Obama campaign did gather lots of data. They were believed to be, they were portrayed as being brilliant for leveraging that data and reaching its audience. The question is whether that's acceptable. And whether something more happened with Cambridge Analytica, where they reached a broader audience, gained any of that data illegally or unethically, and then used factual information or perhaps exaggerated rhetorical information to promote a certain candidate.
Okay, thank you for that from John. All right, and now on to Doug, who says, quick question for Malcolm. Too late. He's gone now. A dear family member who happens to be a Republican is cited as a source, something called QAnon, which supposedly provides inside intelligence information about Trump and his keen strategies. For instance, it seems to say that Trump has already met with North Korea and sorted everything out. Do you have any insight about it? Not me. No, we're all shaking our heads. Look, anybody can say anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and Keith says, what is the actual definition of terrorism? I know what a terrorist is, but what is the actual definition of terrorist? And should the definition be changed to include school shooters and white American gunmen? Are we using the term terrorist improperly in the news? And that's from Keith.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the motivation. You commit an act of violence or you threaten an act of violence to scare a broader population. You target some people, but then it's usually connected to a political position. So somebody might just be insane and take out a mass killing, and someone else might do it to promote a particular political point of view, and that person would be regarded as a terrorist. That's one way to look at it.
So, Mike, when those jerks pulled down the Oklahoma facility and killed all those little kids,
right? They were a part of the militia movement out of Michigan that was anti-U.S. government, and that was an act of terrorism, where somebody else who might go into a school just might be mentally ill and be angry at the school or angry at and in that regard, it's a fine line, but I think it's different.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about New York State politics. We want to get into the Cynthia Nixon story as to her running for governor of the Empire State. We will be right back to discuss that with J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok right after this.
You're always on my mind, even though now I am gone. I taught you these four chords so you could sing your morning song.
Shovels and a Rope appearing at the Egg tomorrow night at on Thursday night. Yeah, no, on the 21st. Tomorrow would be Wednesday, correct?
If your teenager comes home and says, "I'm going to go see Shovels and Rope tomorrow night," would you say, "Well, let me check out that band. Let me see what's going on
they
with
sound
that."
Pretty good though, don't
they?
They're
very nice band.
I'm guessing they don't appeal to the teens as much as they do as an older millennial demographic.
Gotcha,
but I don't know. All right, let's go to the story that I teased, if you will, before the break, and that is that we have a new candidate in the race for governor of New York State, Cynthia Nixon. Surprising probably no one, but Cynthia Nixon has announced that she has is officially running for governor in New York State as a Democratic candidate. She will primary Governor Andrew Cuomo. And you have a very high profile woman who has done a lot of work not only in acting but also within as an activist, both LGBT as well as education, and is a frequent visitor to the Capitol and meeting with legislators and protests and so forth. So she certainly knows the state well. And she is now a candidate for governor. If you are the Andrew Cuomo campaign, how scared are you?
You're very scared. I'll tell you why. This is a guy who does not like anyone who says anything bad about him. And he lets it be known. He's always described as having sharp elbows. And so what happens is he comes after the people who don't like him. Hey, look, you know, I try to be fair. I really do. But yesterday, the Lieutenant Governor Hochul came in. She's a lovely person, a very nice person. And she saw me standing there, and she came up to me. Of course, I didn't know who she was in the beginning. It took me a second to figure it out.
But she knew who you were. That's important.
Well, I suppose. And she said, she said it with a big smile on her face. I'm sure she meant well. Be nicer to the governor, she said. So she'd been briefed. That's clear. She was supposed to be on our Capital Connection program, and then she canceled at the last minute. I'm sure somebody up at the boss store. So anyway, he doesn't like it when people oppose him, and he, you know.
But can she win?
Well, theoretically, she cannot. If you were parsing the race right now, you would say, look, he's got $30 million in the bank. He's moved over sharply to the left. Gay groups have endorsed him and said, you know, you're our guy. On the other hand, people don't like him that much. That's the first thing. I'm telling you, that's what it's about. And number two, he knew himself going in that third terms are very, very hard deals to go into. So he's got this, and I'm sure he's going to be angry. He already took an angry swipe at her. Dumb. Don't do it. Just ignore it or say nice things about her, and that people are allowed to run in elections, and that's what we have.
No, I was just going to say it's going to put groups like the Women's Equality Party and other liberal groups who Cuomo has gotten closer to in the last couple of years.
Who he owns.
In a difficult spot, because Cynthia Nixon has been an advocate for equality in education spending. She
right.
talks a lot about income inequality and how New York is, you know, has the richest and the poorest people in it, and there has to be something done about that. She's not just a celebrity. I mean, she's not that big a star, you know, the way a Hollywood star would be, or something like that. But she has creds as a an activist, as you were saying, Joe. She's a familiar face around Albany. Rachel Silberstein spoke to Jerry Benjamin, the political scientist at New Paltz, who we all know and well and respect. And he says it's going to give a particular problem for Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who's been a strong ally of Governor Cuomo. But she's going to be pressured to support somebody like Cynthia Nixon. So, and there's others like that who are going to be put on the spot. I'm not saying that Cynthia Nixon is going to defeat the governor, but, you know, nobody knew who Zephyr Teachout was when she took on the governor the
last
time.
With no money.
With no money. She was a law professor who had just recently moved from Vermont to New York City to teach at Fordham Law. And she got 37% of the vote in that primary, which it didn't take the governor down, but it's embarrassing for a guy who is looking at a national profile.
And remember, nobody knew who she was, who Zephyr Teachout was.
Yeah, we know who Cynthia Nixon is.
People know who Cynthia Nixon is. I saw the first ad that she put out yesterday. It was excellent. Showed her kissing her little daughter and all of that. I mean, you know, very, very sharply done.
Now, there's also the C word, right, which is corruption.
Oh,
and
gosh.
And so what is that? If she is running an anti-corruption campaign, the governor certainly has some question marks around his name in this field. And there are also with the conviction of Joe Percoco, the upcoming trial of Elaine Calleiros, you know, it seems as though that would be a part of this race.
You know what? That's a brilliant insight on your part.
Thank you. Here to help.
No, that is a brilliant insight because what happened is the Prococo trial happens. The guy's convicted on three counts, and it's as if the bear was walking in the woods and nobody noticed. You know what I mean? You make a face, Mike. I'm not sure what you mean,
but keep going.
Well, if a bear, you know, walks in the woods, or if the tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, right?
Alan's saying it was basically a one-day story.
Yeah.
Cuomo's top guy goes down, three counts of corruption. It's a one-day story. Everybody goes about their business.
Now into all of this comes, that's so well put.
Yes. Shartok English. English is Shartok English.
Our spokesman for Dr. Shartok.
Now, into all of this comes Cynthia Nixon, and she's going to raise it daily. She's going to put up pictures on the screen of Prococo being let in or out in handcuffs and talking who he was.
Or more uncomfortably, she may show photos of Cuomo and Prococo, especially the one in the primary back 4 years ago when Zephyr Teachout tried during, I think it was the Columbus Day Parade, tried to go up and shake hands with Governor Cuomo, her opponent in the primary, and there's this rather big gentleman kind of pushing himself in front of her, pushing her away.
That's him?
And it's Joe Percoco. It's kind of a viral video out on the internet.
So the question for both of you is, or even three of you is it possible that she could win?
I think it's possible. I think it's improbable, but I think it's possible. And what the overhang, her bet is that the national mood of what Trump is creating amongst the base of the Democratic Party is a lot of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is pushing the base of the Democratic Party further to the left. And these activists want something to really put their shoulder into in 2018.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that she's a stalking horse for de Blasio, because we know things have gotten really bad between those two guys. Is it terribly important that she wins? You see what I mean? You might run for this office, but, you know, she might be be worried that she might have to serve.
Well, what I found out in the video about her, I didn't know this. She was brought up by a single mom. She has come from nothing to be one of the biggest movie stars in Hollywood.
Right.
She's accumulated a net worth of, according to Newsweek, over $60 million. And she knows how to stay on script. And when you're running in politics, being able to stay on script and not veer from script, that's a huge quality. It's a quality that Andrew Cuomo, frankly, isn't very good at staying on script. He's shown that over the last couple of months.
He never gets on it.
And she's going to have celebrity endorsements. She's going to be well-funded. And you have to make Andrew Cuomo the prohibitive front-runner in this race.
Sure.
But we saw number one seed Virginia lose to a 16 seed in March Madness the other day. So it can happen. We've seen Arnold Schwarzenegger win the governorship of California. And we saw Donald Trump become president of the United States. I would think that's a far crazier thing to happen, Trump being elected president, than Cynthia Nixon elected governor.
So can I throw out one more stretch? But it is something. The governor is not announced yet. Is there any chance that he reads the tea leaves and says, I'm not running?
Hell no.
Not at this point. I think he's in it for a mile. You know?
No.
Yeah. And JP, your point was excellent about her New York City connections. I mean, Zephyr Teachout really was not a New York City person. She had a lot of support there, but nothing like what Cuomo has there. Well, Cynthia Nixon is a New York City person who is connected to the mm-hmm. arts and connected to the liberal wing of the Democratic Party there. And there will be more defections for her. I wonder how she'll do upstate. I just don't know. But Zephyr Teachout did very well upstate.
Well, she may do well upstate for the same reason Zephyr Teachout did well upstate. They don't like Cuomo. I mean, you can either vote for somebody or you can vote against somebody. That's part of it.
And how much of Governor Cuomo's $30 million war chest is he willing to spend to defeat Zephyr Teachout? What happens if Zephyr Teachout is able to spend $15 million or $20 million on a primary? Is he going to blow his his war chest on trying to defeat Zephyr Teachout?
Cynthia Nixon?
You mean Cynthia Nixon.
I'm sorry.
Cynthia
Nixon.
Same point.
Yeah, and then he won't have it left to spend on his November run, should he survive the primary run, which is what people expect.
I think you have to remember the psychological profile here. You have a guy who has a complicated relationship with his father. We all know that. On the one hand, he adores him, and on the other hand, he wants to do better than the father did. And the way to do that is to become elected president of the United States, which I think is very unlikely at this stage of the game.
Well, you would have said that about Donald Trump. I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, back, a few years before the election.
Well, point taken.
So the other question I have is is there a possibility that she runs on Cynthia Nixon would run on another party line and also face him in the
I don't know if anyone put that question to
him. No, that's actually, I've talked about that. I mean, I think here's the problem. The only real place that she could go is to the Working Party's family. And unfortunately for her, the Working Families Party is owned by the labor unions. They're the ones who come up with all the money. And they are fiercely pro-Cuomo. They've made their deals with Cuomo, and they're not about to do that. And the Women's Party, I think, has a close relationship with Cuomo also. So I don't see the third-party possibility, although Joe, as usual, you're very perceptive in raising that, because if there's a third-party candidate and people don't want to vote for Andrew, don't want to vote for the Republican, that could hurt him.
I agree with you, Joe. That is the question, will she run on another party line in November and take 15% of the vote from Cuomo? And make it a potentially competitive
race.
Remembering that this is a Trump year in New York State, the guy is despised by New Yorkers in this blue state. And one could hardly expect, although I have to say, I've been saying it all along, that if they run DeFrancisco for governor, they'll lose badly.
State senator from Syracuse.
Yeah, they'll lose badly.
Well, Mark Molinaro is about to announce his candidacy,
my
the
point
Dutchess
exactly.
County Executive. Yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Mikey. That's right. Then if Molinaro runs, then they got a George Pataki-like guy who's, sort of nice. I think he's much more attractive in terms of his profile than and I don't mean his physical profile, than Pataki was. So that's a possibility.
Molinaro does seem like an attractive candidate, but when you look at him on the issues, he aligns with national Republicans on gun control and taxes, and it's just not a good state for any Republican to run for governor. I would say he's less moderate than Pataki on the issues.
You will remember what was said about I think it was D'Amato. Or maybe it was Schumer when they introduced Kirsten Gillibrand. They said, she'll evolve. And so she has.
All right. And on that note, we will pause. We're going to go over to news with Ray Graff and catch up on some other business when we return. We'll attack many other stories that we have making the news. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union and J.P. Miller from the Empire Report. We'll be back right after this.
Oh, Johnny, won't you come outside? Don't you know it's not polite to hide? Oh, Johnny, won't you come outside with me?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 20th of March. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller making up the panel this morning. Let us go to the story, which is, I think, of interest to those who have been watching this Russia investigation, and that is that President Trump's legal team was poised for a shakeup on Monday, according to two people briefed on the matter, as he openly dismissed firing one of his lawyers. Another considered resigning, and a third who pushed theories on television that Mr. Trump was framed by the FBI.
That's the new guy.
Join the roster. Mr. Trump has weighed aloud in recent days to close associates, whether to dismiss his lawyer Ty Cobb, who had pushed more strongly a strategy of cooperating fully with the special counsel investigation. The president reassured Mr. Cobb that he had no plans to fire him, according to a person who spoke with the president late Monday, in part to prevent a narrative that his team was in disarray after the New York Times began making inquiries. Mr. Trump's lead lawyer, John Dowd, has contemplated leaving his post because he has concluded that he has no control over the behavior of the president. It's shocking it took him that long to figure that out, but okay. The two people briefed on the matter said this. Ignoring his lawyer's advice, Mr. Trump has reverted to a more aggressive strategy of publicly assailing the inquiry that he initially adopted in the weeks immediately after the special counsel Robert Mueller was appointed. Now the president has begun attacking Mr. Mueller himself. So you have the firing of McCabe over the weekend on Friday. You have the president coming out in a tweet storm, if you will, both on Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday, attacking Mueller, attacking the investigation, saying there's no collusion. The slight difference being that he's directly attacking Mueller, going after Mueller specifically for the first time of actually saying the name. Then there is a walk back from the attorneys of saying, well, what I said was my own personal feelings and not that of the president, even though that is what the president said on Twitter.
Right. John Dowd had said over the weekend he thought it was time for the investigation of the Russia influence to end.
Correct.
Yeah.
Then there seemed to be some sort of coalescing around the fact that we needed to calm down, that there were enough concerns from the Republicans in the Senate and the House who were on the Sunday shows saying that the president better be careful, that this Lindsey Graham saying this could spell the end of the presidency if the president were to fire Robert Mueller. And then that's when we started to hear about, as the Times indicates, they start going in looking at the makeup of the legal team, which for a moment yesterday, and it appears only for a moment, that they were around this idea that they were going to, Sarah Huckabee Sanders even said this in the briefing yesterday, that they were going to, they had no plans. They put out an official statement. We have no plans of firing Mueller. We're working on this, and we're going to comply with everything that they want. Now, these stories that they're getting up and hiring the guy who's being quite critical of Mueller and what he's doing.
So I'm not saying the president is a rat. I'm not. I'm just saying he's acting like one in a corner. In other words, he's down there now, scared to death about what's happening. So he's reaching out. He's not listening to his prime advisors. And by the way, if you were those lawyers, you know that when this whole thing disassembles, there's going to be all kinds of charges against all kinds of people, ethical charges, legal, you know, stuff. You have to be very, very careful about what you do and say. And so they have. And with Donald Trump, who doesn't give a damn about what's good for anybody else, he's obviously mad enough at them to bring in this attack dog, which they have now brought in. And I think he's in real trouble. I keep thinking of Dick Nixon down on the floor praying with Henry Kissinger at the end. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? The circle is growing tighter and tighter around him, and it should be.
Now, we're referring to Joseph DeGeneva.
We are.
He is a longtime Washington lawyer who's regular on Fox News.
And former U.S. attorney.
And he has strongly defended the president on the air. He says that there was a brazen plot to exonerate Hillary Clinton, and if she didn't win the election, then to frame Donald Trump with a falsely created crime. That's what he has said. So he's a strong defender of Trump, and maybe Trump needs to be on the PR offensive here, and that may be the shift that's going on.
Now, when he says that, I heard that played several times. Is he saying that Mueller's team, that the FBI is the one? Is this
the
deep state?
Right, Department of Justice.
Working through and setting up this this conspiracy.
That's exactly right. He's going after the career people in the FBI. Some people call the deep state part of the deep state. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really dangerous for the president to continue to surround himself with people that agree with him. You know, he needs good. He needs good legal representation. He is a disaster of a potential client for a lawyer, right? So the guy is dishonest. He contradicts himself constantly. And he is, worst of all, he's acting guilty all the time. Everybody can see through his tweets and what he's saying on TV, he's acting like he
did
something wrong.
33%, no.
Well, I think even those 33% look at this guy and say he's acting guilty. And I think that his longtime attorney, Mark Kasowitz, was working on the Mueller probe. And there's a question as to whether he's stepping aside or staying involved. But Kasowitz is someone who has worked for Trump for many years. He has Trump's best interests at heart. And he also has the ability to tell Trump when he's wrong because he's had a long time working with him. So Trump doing this, I think, is bad, bad news for him.
Well, you know, the other thing I liked about what Joe was positing with us is that Trump is, the Huckabee Sanders woman comes on and now says, we're not going to fire anybody. But nobody believes a word they say anymore. Their entire credibility is in shatters. So when he said, we're not going to fire anybody, we know they'll fire him.
But you know, there's a whole segment of people, and maybe it's that 33%, that are okay with that. They don't really expect Trump or his spokespeople to be telling the truth. They believe that that is a necessary tactic to counter the attacks that are being made against him, and they're ready to accept that, evidently. I mean, how else could he have the support of 33% of the electorate or of the people polled?
Well, the one group that I think that Trump is semi-fearful of are Senate Republicans. And when he sees those Senate Republicans go on Sunday shows and call him out as to the Mueller probe, he gets nervous about that. He knows that on January 20th, 2019, he's likely going to have a Democratic Senate. And if that Democratic Senate only needs to peel off 6 or 7 Republicans to vote for impeachment and vote him out of office, and he fires Mueller, it'll be, I think, easy for them to get him out of office through impeachment.
I'm just not so sure. I mean, you know, I think that in the beginning they were all saying he better not fire Mueller. Now we have seen this mealy mouse stuff Ryan sends out. Ryan, who is, by the way, sorry, dare I use the word delightfully, in danger of losing his own seat. Ryan sends out, an assistant to say the president shouldn't fire Mueller. We haven't heard a word, not a word from the Kentuckian. To me, that is exemplary of what's going to happen here. So let's assume for a second, let's play it out, that they all get together and they decide to pass a law saying you can't fire Mueller. Well, you know, the only way they could do that is if everybody voted for it. Because otherwise...
It would need to be veto-proof.
He'd veto it, yeah. Right. Yeah. And we know that. And even in the case where they all did that thing on Russia and condemned Russia almost unanimously and gave money to do it, he hasn't done a thing with that money.
Right. They had the Senate had funded steps so that the election... so that the U.S. could build in protections against hacking of election systems, and $100 million, I believe, and that has not been spent by the Trump administration. But Mitch McConnell's silence is an indication that there are some Republicans who are ready to shift and support the president here and allow
him— To support the president?
Yes. If Mitch McConnell is not criticizing the president now, there are other Republicans alongside him that are ready to—
Absolutely.
Yeah, that are ready to support him. I know what Lindsey Graham, you know, a leading Republican senator, said. He said that he's going to cross a red line if he fires Mueller. But Lindsey Graham is all over the place. He'll say one thing one day, another thing another day. And I don't think that means necessarily anything. I think the president's support in the Senate is solid.
Well, I agree with what you say, but I don't think that his support is solid in the Senate because these senators are motivated by their own reelection. And right now they are walking a tightrope between supporting him and because they are fearful of a primary and opposing him because they know that that's the right thing to do. So if these senators see that Trump has kind of jumped the shark and they need to oppose this guy for their own self-preservation, they will line up so quick to do that for their own self-preservation and throw this guy over the side of the ship.
But we're not at the tipping point yet.
Well, it's hard to imagine getting closer to the tipping point. I guess next week we'll be closer, but...
the tipping point is when they begin to jump off the side of the ship, and they haven't done that yet. You're quite right. Lindsey Graham is a very perceptive politician. I happen to believe he wants to be president of the United States. He wants to be president of the United States.
Try again.
He's trying to get a few people on his side. The talk show people love him when he does that kind of stuff. But for the most part, these guys are silent. And the ones who are speaking up, by the way, are the ones who are giving up their offices.
Meanwhile, Trump's lawyers have turned over documents to Mueller with hopes of limiting the interview scope. This very much goes into what JP was saying earlier, which is so if you give these very detailed key moments the hope is that you curtail the scope of a presidential interview, because it seems as though that the Trump legal team is ultimately trying to avoid a long, drawn-out interview with the president of the United States, who, as this article points out in the Washington Post, has a penchant for making erroneous claims and would be vulnerable in an hours-long interview.
Exactly. You can't lie to Mueller. You lie to Mueller, it's a crime.
Well, there is a question about whether he would be under oath if he does agree to take questions from a team from Mueller's staff. And then what the consequences would be if he was untruthful when he had not sworn to that, and what the what that would do for him. But it is clear that his legal team, no matter who they are trying to prevent him from getting deposed because it is so risky.
Here are the big problems with Trump interviewing with Mueller is, one, he doesn't think he did anything wrong, where everybody else thinks that he did something wrong.
How do you know that?
Because he's an egomaniac. He doesn't think that he did anything wrong.
He said, I'm chomping at the bit. I want to get out there. I want to say my story.
He's lying.
And his lawyers are going to say, okay, let's stick to this script, these topics. He is going to go off script in the first minute. He is going to talk to them. He thinks he can win them over. He thinks he's the world's best salesman. It is going to be him interviewing with Mueller is going to be a disaster for himself. He should try to limit it.
All right, let's go to letters in our last 5 minutes.
Here we go, very quickly. Mr. Cuomo would be wise not to underestimate Cynthia Nixon. He will find out just how fragile his New York City base is. Could be the year of the woman. Look out, says Eric from Richmond.
It might be the year of the subway, actually.
Yeah, could be.
That's a good point.
You never know. And from Richard, Cuomo should ditch the governorship and run for president. Governor Cuomo can avoid the torture of a third term as governor and devote himself to running for president. What has he got to lose? He wants to be governor like his father was.
Governor Cuomo does have the largest campaign stockpile of cash of any elected official in the Democratic Party in the country. He has $30 million war chest, is bigger than anybody else in the country.
By the way, I may be wrong about this. Mike may be my advisor on this, but I think what happens is you're allowed to use certain amount of that money in a run for president. But you can't use it all because there are different rules for the state fundraising and the federal fundraising.
I think it could all be rolled into a super PAC.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Although Jeb Bush had more money than anybody else running in the primary last year, or the primary in 2016.
Yes,
so.
And he came in a distant eighth.
Yes.
Linda said, normally I would want to vote for a woman, but I'm tired of these celebrities who want to start out running for one of the top offices. If she would work her way up from a lower office, that would be a different story. Linda from Hurley. Bill says, Russia and Cambridge Analytica. One big question is, if Cambridge Analytica were in cahoots with the Russians in targeting different states and counties with this information about Hillary Clinton, will Facebook be able to answer that question, or will it fall upon Mueller's sleuths? Have a great first day of spring. Yeah, that's funny. Anne says, Cambridge Analytica, Russia and fake news. What is the likelihood that the same data purchased by Cambridge Analytica for the Trump campaign was used by the Russian operatives who sent fake news to specific targets? Interesting question. Will says, our friend Will from does the classification of terrorism have anything to do with the insurance ramifications of an event? I'm referring to those terrorism clauses we all sign in our insurance policies.
Yeah, they're a lot like the rules of engagement that we sign when we log into websites.
Yes.
We don't read them, and then we regret it later.
Oh, okay. We don't care. All right. And finally, let us go to what the president had to say about opioids yesterday. Was that our final story?
Mm-hmm. Well...
Well, what did he say about opioids?
Right, so let's kill them. Let's kill people who.
I know what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about the Uber story. I thought that was a great story. That's the one I wanted.
Driverless
car. Yes, the self-driving car, the Uber car, kills pedestrian in Arizona. And then Uber said, oh, well, maybe that's a bad thing. So maybe we'll stop doing this because we don't want to kill any more pedestrians. Arizona officials saw opportunity when Uber and other companies began testing driverless cars a few years ago and said, hey, bring it on. We would love to have the driverless cars. Arizona, lovely place. We want your cars. Please come here and test. So they did. And then on Sunday night, an autonomous car operated by Uber and with an emergency backup driver behind the wheel struck and killed a woman on a street in Tempe, Arizona. It's believed to be the first pedestrian death. There have been drivers who have died, but people in the car, passengers. The first pedestrian death associated with the self-driving technology. The company quickly suspended testing in Tempe as well as in Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Toronto. Are we going to come to a point where people figure out this may not be a great idea, the self-driving car?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a reality. I think this is a big setback, and they should suspend the testing of it, but they will resume, and there'll be more safeguards. What I don't understand about this story is it says a driver was in the car to take over, but apparently it was going so fast.
45 miles an hour.
Yeah, that even when a driver took over after it kind of went off on its own, the car went off on its own, it was too late to prevent hitting this woman who was walking with a bicycle.
Horrible.
But it is a terrible tragedy, and it's very unfortunate. And the right thing to do would be suspend everything and then build in layers of safeguards. The problem is governments want the revenue that comes. Pittsburgh allows the testing of driverless cars. Now California has lightened the rules that would have otherwise halted the testing of driverless cars. That's why Arizona made it very favorable for these car companies to come in. You know, Google is testing a car. Uber's testing cars, and other companies are doing it too. That's great. Just stay off the streets if you're in Tempe, Arizona.
I'm going to hold you there. We're out of time. Thanks to JP. Thanks to Mike and Alan. We'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.